Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
It won't play. Okay, I'll have to then. Well, let me play this one then. Oh, we're off to a great start here at 2 a.m. Oh, well, this is the beginning of the show anyway. The Blackhawks. Good morning, everyone. Elton Jim Toronto with you here for 2 to 5 a.m., filling in for David Plyer. And I am on a Blackhawks high because I just actually came back from the United Center a few hours ago, seeing one of the great, great Blackhawk games. And I believe that that will be a game that people say, I was at the Game 6 versus the Blues in 2016. Yeah, I think so. I'll tell you, it was an amazing game, a great result, obviously. 6-3, Blackhawks, do or die. We go back to St. Louis on Monday to go to hopefully into that next round. And I have to think that right now the mojo is definitely with the Blackhawks, as they have now won two in a row. And this game was very decisive. I have to be honest with you, though. The beginning of the game was not so good. Blackhawks played one of the worst first periods that I've ever seen them play. Wow. I mean, you would think. I mean, the crowd was going crazy at the beginning, before the game started. Everybody got there very early. Jim Cornelison sang his heart out and certainly got the everybody up on their feet and jacked for the game. And you'd think that the team would immediately come out flying. But instead, they just were kind of on the back of their heels. And there was a quick moment in the first minute, within the first 20 seconds or so, where Patrick Kane had an opportunity right in front of the net, and he hesitated a little and didn't get it, and that would have really helped. But then soon after that, within 2 or 3 minutes, the Blackhawks did score and took a 1-0 lead, and the place erupted, and it looked like, okay, they're ready to go. And then St. Louis came back with 3 unanswered goals. And the United Center was like a funeral. And it looked like, wow. And the Blackhawks just looked disoriented. They didn't look aggressive. They looked lazy. And I was like, what the heck is going on here? And I was very afraid that this could have been a total blowout. When they went to the locker room, something happened in there, whether it was Coach Q, whether it was the captain, Jonathan Toews, and many of the other veteran players who have been in this situation, a do-or-die situation, before in the last several years. And the Hawks have an amazing record when they are at 6, or in a game 6, and close to elimination. So they've definitely been through it before. Thankfully, this 3-1 deficit happened in the first period, as opposed to later in the game when they couldn't come back and work back from it, and which is exactly what they did. And when they came out in the second period, it was obvious that that they were on a mission. And as the period wore on, you could see they were shooting the puck more. They were around the net. The first period they hardly had any clear shots, aside from the one goal at the beginning. But then they were around the net. They were shooting. In fact, Corey Crawford, for a good part of the whole second period, didn't even face a shot. I think there was maybe 3 or 4 shots at most that St. Louis had. And the Blackhawks just dominated. One of the best periods, I think, that the Blackhawks have ever played. Now, once again, this is going back decades, so it's a goofy analogy to make. But one of the best periods I've ever seen them play. Let's put it that way. Wow. What a game. And as I said during the crosstalk with Carl, there was a moment, and I looked at the clock, at the game clock. It was 7 minutes and 29 seconds left. And I'm not sure if the Blackhawks had just tied it or if they had just taken the lead. But there was a timeout for television. And so play stops and everybody's just kind of sitting around. And there was such an energy in this room after this great comeback that suddenly the crowd just stood up and erupted on its own because it's a timeout. Nothing's happening. Players are just sort of skating around. The refs are getting pucks, and you know, the guys are fixing the net. I mean, it's a TV timeout. There's nothing happening, and the crowd just erupted. And I have been to the United Center for some pretty major events, major concerts. I was just there in January to see Bruce Springsteen. I've seen, you know, the Who there. I've seen some of the biggest, I think I saw the Rolling Stones there. I mean, I've seen some major acts as well as some major Blackhawk games, including Stanley Cup games. And I don't think I have ever heard the Madhouse on Madison be that mad. It was so cool. And the people just wouldn't stop. They would not stop. It just didn't start and die. It went on, and then it went on, and then everybody in the room felt it happening, and they just continued it going until they finally dropped the puck. And it was probably a good 3 or 4 minutes because, like I said, it was a national TV timeout, so there were commercials going on. And it was just sustained and loud and energetic. And when that happened, I said, there is no way the Blackhawks are losing this game. And St. Louis, who has looked very hungry and very determined throughout this series, they looked lost. The second period, they were. I didn't even know if St. Louis was on the ice, to be honest with you. And the Hawks certainly proved it. They just threw everything they had at them. And even the third period, St. Louis tried to come back a little. But the Blackhawks were still too strong for them. And think about it. The final score was 6-3, and St. Louis scored all their goals within a 5-minute period in the first period. And that's it.
I was scared towards the end. I was out for most of the evening, and so I caught the last parts.
That's Roger Badish.
Oh, hi there.
Oh, hello, Roger.
Oh, hello there.
You know, Roger, I come from Waukegan, you see.
Really?
I'm still in my Jack Benny after the old-time radio.
Really?
You see, I come from my wife, Mary.
Rochester.
Said to me,
yes.
You know, Elton, we should go to a Blackhawks game. And I said, fine, I'll call George Burns, and he'll get us tickets. And sure enough, he got us tickets. And we had a wonderful time in Waukegan, you see. How are you doing, Roger?
I'm okay.
I love Jack Benny. I really do.
It's fantastic shows. Great writing.
Oh yeah,
great writing.
Yeah, but anyway, so you said you were not. So you were that person in Chicago.
I was that person
who did not watch the game.
Well, I mean, I don't like to jinx things. If
okay, Roger,
I get real nervous.
Roger,
I'm a very nervous now.
Roger,
yeah.
Oh, Roger.
Yes. Yes,
Roger. Man. I love you. But I have to honest. Whenever I hear someone say, I don't want to jinx anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Roger, I love you very much.
I know.
You have absolutely no power in this world. If you are so arrogant to think that you, this barely a crumb on this marble that's floating in this universe, and you think that if you do something, another event will be affected.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's arrogance. That's Caesar. That's
no.
Caligula. That's Nero arrogance. That's Caligula arrogance.
No, it's not arrogance. It's power.
It's not. You have
pure,
no.
Raw
there is no such
power.
Thing as a no, you nobody you don't have a jinx.
I touch the dial on my TV and I send shockwaves through the air.
So in other words, it doesn't matter how good Jonathan Taves is.
No.
It
no,
doesn't
no.
matter how good no. Patrick Kane is.
No.
It doesn't matter
no.
how good Corey Crawford is.
No.
It does matter if Roger doesn't touch a dial. Wow.
Amen.
Wow.
Amen.
Wow.
Amen. Plus the voodoo dolls I have of the St. Louis Blues players.
The Bluest. The St. Bluest.
They're very,
which is not
very
a bad
blue.
Name.
No. St. Bluest.
Hi-yo. In fact, there was a guy in my section tonight who had, I mean, this guy, I love Blackhawk fans because they are so passionate and they are so off the charts. There's a guy who, you know, when you have, I have my Blackhawk jersey on tonight, with my 35, my Tony O. Of course, yesterday, Saturday night, if you want to talk about good luck charms, I'll give you this one. It was Tony Esposito's birthday. So the Blackhawks did well on Tony O's birthday.
Of course, sure.
But there's this guy, you know, these jerseys are not cheap.
No, gosh, no.
Especially when you get them all fixed up with all the little emblems and all the patches and the names on the back and all that stuff and the numbers. And this guy, instead of putting his name on the back or putting his favorite player's name on the back, this is how dedicated he is. You know where the name goes on in the back of the jersey?
Right, right.
He had Blues Suck.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Nice.
So people were taking pictures of that. They were posing with him on his
very
back. So,
I mean, cool.
So he is completely ready for this series. And that's why I love Blackhawk fans, because they're so passionate. And I was up in good old Section 219, nice seats and a nice view and a great game. Now, oh, Roger.
Yes.
Dueling Bennies.
We're opening next week on the road.
We'll be at the Rialto.
At the Rialto.
Oh, Don. Oh, Dennis.
Oh, Dennis. Yes, Mr. Benny.
Isaac Stern just came over. He's going to. I love that. Where's Cary Grant? I mean, don't you love that show?
I know.
But anyway, so what were you doing? Now, now I was not aware of this. I did not know this. But all my voices are coming out today. I did not know this, but you are Jewish. And I didn't know that.
That is right, elephant breath.
Yes. May a yak have a date with your mother. But so you are in the midst of Passover.
Yeah.
So happy Passover, my friend.
Thank you. Yeah.
And you, of course, I assume, as part of the tradition. Tradition! That's another Jewish. I love Fiddler.
Oh, great. Great musical.
Golda. Yeah. What do we do with our little girl, Golda? Gosh, do I want to play Tevye so bad? Anyway,
why not?
I would. I need to. I need to get a little older.
You were just on with the broken foot last year, right?
If I was a rich man, diddle 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 dum all day long, I diddle diddle dee. If I was a wealthy man,
hey,
never have to work hard. Diddle 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 diddle. Anyway,
welcome to Broadway, Chicago,
Roger.
Yes.
So you, I assume, according to the Jewish tradition of Passover, I'm supposed you. I assume you had a Seder.
Yes, we did.
You did you did Seder. Is that a verb or is that a noun?
Seder is noun.
But can't you Seder? Like Roger Sedered today?
No.
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 I can't say that.
No. Seder is it's a noun. It's
I understand that, but can't I make it into a verb?
You can do anything.
Can I make
you
it into an? Can I make it into an action word?
You could. It
Because Roger
be correct usage,
Roger Sedered today.
I went to a Seder.
But you also Sedered because you did things that were of the Seder.
True.
So I believe that I'm going to go with that.
Okay.
And let me, first of all, for this Passover, I wish you Nachas, my friend.
Thank you.
And then, of course, then there's a man, there's a place that here, Roger. There's a Roger, right? The most holiest of days of the Passover, where we commemorate the exodus from Egypt after slavery, after centuries, and we go out into the desert, and we're crossing Red Seas, and then Moses can't go to the Promised Land because somehow he pissed off God somewhere along the way. But anyway, so what the key... The key to the Seder...
You've just opened up the whole top, haven't you? It's just all coming out.
It's 2 a.m. It's 2 a.m. You know, I filled in from 7 to 11 earlier this week, and there were all these commercial breaks. You know, Roger, and it brought me back to my days in the afternoon when we had so many commercial breaks.
I know. You guys hardly got a chance to say anything.
Yeah, as soon as you get momentum, you got to go cut through commercials. So that's what I love about this shift. Not only, Roger.
Yes, Jack.
Are the bosses aren't even awake, so they don't know what you're saying, you see. But they also, there's no breaks. In fact, Shantae is my producer today, and she doesn't like to talk on the air, but you could just nod your head here. I don't have to break until, like, another 5 minutes, right? Yeah, another 5 minutes. And I started at, like, 2:08.
Yeah.
And you know what the funny thing is? I still have more to talk about.
Of course.
But anyway, so so
we're
tell me
about the Seder.
Yeah, so can we give us a little insight? Can you take us in a little into the Jewish faith? For those there's a difference between a Jew and a Gentile. The Gentiles, we don't know what the heck from Seders, but you do. So tell me what is a Seder? Is a meal celebration.
Well, it's actually it's not only a meal.
Well,
it's a religious
celebration. All right, I already tell me Seder me. Got Seder?
And
that's my new T-shirt.
Got Seder?
Got Seder?
There are all right. So this is a retelling of the story of the Exodus, of the Jewish people.
Now, do you mention Moses?
We do, even though
so it shall be written.
Only, and I'll tell you, because the rabbi who led the service today, tonight, last
I
night,
am the
last
Lord thy God.
And Moses is only married. Married.
Married.
Wow.
Well, he was married to Yvonne DiCarlo.
Not in the movie.
I am a simple shepherd of the Hebrew faith. Let my people go.
Throw down my staff.
So it shall be written. So it shall be done.
So Moses is mentioned just briefly.
Yeah,
because it was God who brought the people out of
Egypt. You know, it's interesting. Yeah, because every time I read about Passover, Passover, it always says the Exodus from Egypt. It doesn't say Moses' exodus, you know, or Moses'
it's
led.
It's the Hebrew people's exodus from Egypt.
It's interesting how, you know, Hollywood has made Moses quite the guy.
Oh, yeah.
But it seems, though, that in the scripture, and at least from the on the Jewish side, that, you know, Moses is, you know,
he's
there.
He's a central figure.
He's there.
Sure.
But it's not, he's not Yahweh.
No. So this is a retelling of the story and a retelling of what the Hebrew people went through in their passage, not only in their time in Egypt, but in their passage to Israel.
And then you explain why there's a great scene in Take the Money and Run, the Woody Allen film, where Woody...
Passover Woody Allen. Okay, go ahead.
Where he gets he's part of an experimental injection program in jail, and the only side effect that he had was that every hour or so, he transformed into a Jewish rabbi.
Oh.
And then so all of a sudden they show him with this big orange beard and he goes, the reasons the Jew eat matzah. Now isn't it matzah? Isn't that a major part of the
it's
Seder?
It's a part of it.
Yeah.
It's a part of it. It represents that we were in such a hurry to leave Egypt that we did
well,
not
I don't
bring
blame
all
you.
The parts.
I don't blame you. It wasn't a holiday.
Pharaoh tells you that you got to go, you got to go.
It wasn't exactly Atlantis, Atlantis resort.
No. Grapes, please.
So what? So what does a Roger Badish have at his Seder?
Well, we had a nice little bowl of matzo ball soup.
Oh, love matzo ball
soup. Oh, it was delicious. It was very good. A little gefilte fish. Gefilte fish.
You eat that?
Yes, I do.
Wow, because it's got all that jelly.
No. That's all. It's sliced. We got
it
sliced.
Oh, really?
Yeah, some
you don't
have
the
big...
The jar. You don't get the one in the jar.
Well, they may have gotten it in the jar, but they cleaned it all off and
nice.
Everything.
Okay, oh, nice. Okay, because it does look a little slimy.
Yeah, no, but you clean it off. It's fine.
Oh, nice.
And they put a little horseradish on it.
Nice.
And a little lettuce.
Did you have a little herring, maybe?
No. No herring. No herring.
There's a place.
So we did that, and then...
what was your main course?
Main course was your choice between whitefish...
A nice piece of whitefish. No sturgeon?
No sturgeon. No, the sturgeon was out today.
Nice piece of whitefish.
It wasn't brisket. The other night was brisket. This was, I think we had tenderloin.
Nice.
So I had some of the tenderloin, which was nice. It was very good.
Very.
And then you had a little, you could have had some cheesecake for dessert.
Nice.
And a big plate of matzah sitting
well,
right
my
in front
friend,
of
I wish you naches.
think.
For your Passover, it goes until next week.
Mm-hmm.
So are you done Seder-ing?
Yes.
We're all done. Oh, how many Seders do you have?
Well, there are mainly two.
Two Seders, no waiting. It's two for Seder.
Yeah, it's a two for sale.
Two for Seder on Saturday.
Yeah. But because I was working Friday night, so I couldn't get to go to that one. I was working earlier on Friday night. Okay. And then, so we were over at my dad's place.
Nice.
And the entire dining area was full. And the cooking staff there cooks all this up under some supervision and did a great job. And we had a rabbi come in, did the service, and we went through the four questions.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Testing, testing, hot out, bound car, 1, 2, 3, 4, testing, testing. Hey, boss, you know, Ralph, I'm getting a little nervous out here. I don't know how you can keep so calm back there.
Get ready. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. Go.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Yo, turn to that station.
Your one definition of a friend is someone who's there when you need him. Well, I needed him and he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Elton.
Jim.
Good morning, Elton Jim.
Elton Jim.
The one, the only, Elton Jim Toronto.
That's right. I'm back. And even though we've been on for more than a half hour, I had to get my opening in. I love that opening. It's always fun. It gets me jacked up, although I didn't need to get jacked up today for the show because, as I said earlier, I just came from a few hours ago. I was at the United Center, that great, great Blackhawks victory. They tie up the series 3-3, take it back for a game 7 in St. Louis on Monday. And you know what? There was a lot of doubt. The Blackhawks have not looked their sharpest in this series at all. And I think St. Louis has been getting a little tired of having very good seasons and getting knocked out very early in the playoffs by the Blackhawks and others over the last several years. And they seem to be a little more determined and a little more ready to go, and especially in the first period today. But I'll tell you, I was saying to people, even after the Blackhawk victory the other night in St. Louis in overtime, because that takes a lot out of you. St. Louis outplayed the Blackhawks the other night in St. Louis, and yet the Blackhawks came away with a victory in overtime on their opponent's home ice. And I got to think that all of a sudden put a little question mark in the St. Louis Blues' in their team's mind, because they should have really clinched it at home the other night. They did outplay the Blackhawks, and they lost. And now the Blackhawks came home, and you would have expected the Blackhawks to be flying high, and they didn't come in the first period. They did not come out flying high at all, even though they scored first. They were just very kind of slow on their feet, not moving the puck, just skating around, not skating with any kind of urgency, considering that this was potentially the end of their season. But something happened in that locker room between the first period and the second period, whether it was Coach Q, whether it was Jonathan Toews, whether it was any of the leaders on that team. And we've got a new Blackhawks team here, folks. And today, as I said at the beginning of the show, those of us who are at that game are going to say, I was at that Blues game, the Hawks Blues game 6 in 2016. It's going to be one of those games. It was really one of those. And I think it's a turning point. I think we're defending champs, and they look like it today. And don't be surprised if all I can say is, if you've got vacations planned for June, you might want to push them back, because there's going to be a lot of hockey in June. That's all I have to say. But now we're going to continue our little fun doings here at WGN. I like to do a thing called the Pop Culture Club.
I see what you did there.
You get that,
yeah.
Roger?
Ooh, I got that.
Pop culture, and then it's Culture Club.
Yeah.
Get it?
Oh.
Pop Culture Club.
I got it like a pan across the face.
Pop Culture Club.
Got it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And part of one of our defining member, our first member on his card, it says 0001.
Wow.
Yeah, not even you, Roger.
No.
Even though you were here with me on my first fill-in show back in October.
That's right.
Yes you were. Oh, Roger.
Yes, Jeff.
You do not get 00001.
Wow.
Sorry. This guy does.
Can I meet this guy?
Yes, Mick Kaler.
Hey,
Mick
buddy.
Kaler?
Mick, oh, Mick.
Oh, hey, man.
I was on the ground floor. I was like the first one to buy Apple stock.
Hey, if you bought Apple stock, you wouldn't be talking to me at 2:45 in the morning.
Exactly. I wouldn't be waiting going, come on, when's he going to call? I'm ready to go.
Believe me. Somewhere else. You know, I hate to even admit this, but I was working in public relations about almost 20 years ago, and I was in the technology department.
Okay.
And there was a point when they kicked Steve Jobs out of Apple.
Right.
The stock at one time for Apple was $1 a share.
Yeah, it was a penny stock. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
And I was a phone call away from calling my stock guy and saying, you know, I know they're in trouble, but for $1 a share, how do you not buy $1 a share for Apple?
Sure.
And I almost bought 1,000 shares.
Oh.
Could you imagine? I mean, I'm not joking. I feel like I'm one of those guys that didn't buy IBM.
Well, let's put it this way, Jim. If you had done that.
Oh, I wouldn't be here at 3 a.m.
You would own not one, but two really cool luxury suites at the United Center.
I mean, do you know how many times that stock, not only is it, you know, 500 a share,
right,
but that stock has split thousands. Oh, I don't even want to think. But I was really contemplating it. But I didn't have all that much extra money, and in fact we had just bought into like a mutual fund and we were just beginning to sort of look to the future, and I didn't want to just buy, you know, be some rogue guy,
right,
and take some bet. And oh gosh, think about that.
Lost chances.
Anyway, so we are here with Mick Kaler, a noted radio producer here in Chicago, has worked, fine resume, worked with some of the all-time greats as well as some popular people here in Chicago, most notably Chicago radio legend Larry Lujack, but also Murph in the Morning in the 80s, and at US 99, WCKG as well. Mick Kaler, and you can hear his work every so often on a semi-regular basis, actually, on the WGN Morning News, because Mick and his partner, Al Flash, write some parody songs as to what's going on around in the world or in the city. And I'm sure that you've got a few Blackhawk songs.
In fact, you want to talk about, you know, you talked about Roger about putting the jinx on the Hawks. Well,
yeah.
I have the power to help the Hawks win. On Wednesday morning, this past Wednesday morning, Channel 9 Morning News played our latest parody song called Slap Shot, which is done to Billy Joel's Big Shot. They played it three times during the morning on Wednesday.
And then they won.
The Hawks have not lost since. Okay?
Look at that.
So here's another arrogant man.
That's right. I am in control.
Just like Roger. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how good Patrick Kane is.
No.
It doesn't matter how good Jonathan Taves is.
No.
Coach Q juggling.
Yeah,
on,
no.
So it's
if Roger Badish touches a knob, no pun intended,
yeah,
or if Mick Kaler writes a 45-second parody song in his basement.
Go.
That's what counts.
Yeah. I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
And I have to. Sorry, go ahead. Were you going to say something, Roger?
No, he's right. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
I know what you're saying.
Draw your own conclusions.
Yeah. I have to mention, we're talking about good players, and I've mentioned, you know,
Kane and Taves
and Crawford, but I have to say, tonight, and this is a guy that I you know, who is kind of new on my radar screen, number 14 on the Blackhawks, his name is Richard Ponick.
Ponick, yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah. Did he have a great game today.
The last two games he had an amazing
He was hitting people left and right because St. Louis is a bruising team, and he gave it back to them in the second, especially in the first period. The Hawks didn't even show up. So don't even talk about the first period. It was a two-period game, really. It was a one-period game because even in the third period, they were kind of even until the Blackhawks scored a couple, and there was an empty netter there. But this Richard Ponick actually made a, in my, not only was he hitting people, but he, I think, made the key play, because on the tying goal, he got the puck, went into the blue zone, and did a beautiful little drop pass to Taves, who was coming down the boards, and then Taves took it and then shoved it across, and Von Reiser?
CBR, yeah.
Yeah, scored the goal. But it was Ponick who made a great pass, and a little drop pass to Taves to set that up. And I always, you know, I watch those small things. So Richard Ponick is definitely on my radar screen.
There you go.
In terms of radar screens, so I'll tell you, Mick and I have known each other since the early 80s, 1982. We both went to college together at Elmhurst College, and we were both on the radio station there at WRSC, 88.7 FM. And we were, and think about this, Mick, and it's not just to say, in my day, but when we were on college radio in the mid-80s, that really was a really cool time to be on, because commercial radio was not playing a lot of the new British new wave music.
Right, exactly.
And they were not even playing that was coming over to the United States through imports. You'd go to the record store and get these imports. But they also initially were not even playing a lot of the bands that were being shown regularly on MTV.
Yeah, they were very slow on all that. And actually, college radio in general really started flexing its power and its muscle at the time when we were there in the early 80s, where they're jumping on an REM, you know, and a U2. And again, like you said, some of these British bands that were coming out.
The Cure, Depeche Mode.
Yeah, exactly. All these groups were coming out, and it was like college radio saying, well, people like this stuff, and we're going to play it because it's cool. And college radio is where I got into the first subject we're going to talk about today, which is Prince.
Well, this is a point. Prince was also one of those artists, because there's no doubt in 1984, old Mick, when I was in Waukegan, you see. even though, you know, Purple Rain came out in 84 and made Prince an international star, practically overnight. But, you know, he did begin to break through in 1980 or so with Dirty Mind, the album. And once again, that Prince, you know, even 1999, that, you know, which became, what was that, in 82 or so?
Yeah, 82 is when that came out.
Yeah, that was not, you know, people, you know, I'm sure, you know, I hate to sound like I'm 100 years old, but you have to understand that music was not on the radio.
No, exactly.
Prince's 1999 was not a hit song when it came out. It became a hit song, but when it first was released, and we talked about this, one of our favorite songs is a song called When You Were Mine.
Which is a fantastic tune.
And that's from like 1980, and that never got played.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it was funny, because during this past week, you know, obviously with everything that's happened with Prince's passing, I look back on these songs, especially that early stuff you talk about, like When You Were Mine, Controversy, songs like that. And then they talk about the other artists that he wrote songs for. And I was like, above all else, take away the showmanship and everything else, this guy was an amazing songwriter. He had a great pop sensibility.
Well, think about it. Not only did he write songs for himself, but, I mean, let's not forget Manic Monday by the Bangles is a Prince song. Let's not forget that Nothing Compares to You by Sinead O'Connor is a Prince song.
She's nothing.
And what was the Sheena Easton song?
Sugar Walls.
Right. That was a Prince song.
Also, one I didn't know about was, until this week, was he wrote Stand Back for
Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't deny, you know, I mean, I was talking about it here once again. I'm at the Blackhawk games today. We got there early. The place opened at 5 o'clock. And they played Prince music for an hour before, as people were coming in. They were just blaring all Prince songs. Mm-hmm. And then during one of the extended commercial breaks, you know, because it was a nationally televised game, they played Raspberry Beret, and in the arena, you know, they have those video strips,
right,
that go around every section,
yeah,
with all news and graphics. Those were all purple, and on the top of the scoreboard, It was purple, and it was said Prince, and it also had his symbol.
Okay,
and they were playing Raspberry Beret, and I was like, wow. I mean, this is, you know, this is big stuff. And what I was initially going to say is, so it was early, what, was it Friday morning, right, when the news broke about his death?
Thursday.
Oh, Thursday. So, I mean, this is the same wavelength that Mick and I, as I said, we've known each other for years, and a lot of times I've always joked that we're twin sons of different mothers. And I saw this pop up on my computer screen in the morning, whenever it was, at 11 o'clock, whenever they made the announcement. And I just picked up the phone, and I dialed Mick's number, and the phone rang, and he obviously saw the caller ID, but he didn't say hello. He didn't say anything. He picked up the phone and just said, "Purple Rain, mister." And I was like, you didn't even have to think why I was calling you.
Yeah, we're the same wavelength. Exactly.
I mean, it was like, wow, because I was just going to say, did you see what just came over the internet?
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it is, you can't deny, like you said, you can't deny that that Prince is definitely an icon. He's definitely a legend. And you know, I mean, what he did musically by taking rock and funk and soul and pop and mixing it all together and having kind of that Jimi Hendrix edge with kind of a Sly Stallone, a Sly Stone vibe, and that kind of that hybrid. Yeah, James Brown with the moves. You know, he really took a lot of influences, and that's what the great artists do. You know, everybody talks about great artists. Many of them aren't truly unique. What they do is they take, where their uniqueness comes, is they take their influences and then put their own spin on them.
Right, and that's what he did, exactly.
Yeah. Well, now, were you a big Prince fan?
What's that?
Were you a big Prince fan?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Are you?
I saw him live and had the records and everything, like I said, from the early stuff on, and really enjoyed his work. But, you know, over these last few days when everyone's paying all these tributes and doing all these homages, as you said, I was thinking about it, and a couple things came to mind. And the first thing was, Prince was cool because he didn't try to be cool. He didn't try to just, like, you know, this is what I'm about. He just went out there and did it. It came so naturally to the guy. And the other part that made him cool was he answered to nobody. You know, you talk about, you know, the hassles he had with his record label when he was the artist formerly known as Prince and all that stuff. And he didn't go out in the press and have big conferences or send out messages. He just did his thing and was totally aloof to everyone else saying, well, you can't do this or what about this or that. He just kept it low key. And to me, that's the ultimate and cool right there.
Well, I think he, and you are seeing it, and I'm not surprised, that he is getting a lot of comparisons in the press to David Bowie.
Right.
In that not only did Bowie pass away only 2 or 3 months ago, but they did push boundaries. They were, you know, kind of groundbreakers in their specific areas. But I have to say, too, that I do believe, and don't get me wrong, I mean, like I said, Prince is a legend. He certainly deserves his place in history. He is an icon for many reasons. I mean, what the heck? He made a color his own.
Yep.
I mean, he actually owned a color.
That's what Jimmy Fallon said tonight.
Did he really? Yeah.
On Saturday Night Live, he said, who else has their own color?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know that because I was it, but he owned a color.
Yeah, and Fallon also noted, and remember, you know, considering our age, Jim, there were people like 10 years younger than us where, as Jimmy Fallon said tonight, like for himself, Madonna, Michael Jackson, and Prince were their, you know, Beatles.
Oh, exactly. That's exactly the point I was going to make, is that you're going to see, for some people, it may seem a little excessive.
Yeah.
All the to-do debate about Prince and his passing and his legacy. But you have to remember now that the people who are sort of in control of the pop culture machine these days, those who are on television like a Jimmy Fallon, those who are producers for radio shows or producers for television shows or producers for news shows or producers for morning news shows or your Kelly Ripa kind of shows, morning talk shows, or your magazine editors or your magazine writers or your newspaper writers and editors, all those people most likely are in their mid to late 30s in powers of position. And just as you said, Prince was there when they were 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, when they were just getting into music in 1984. That's when Prince was huge.
Exactly. Well, and the thing is, and put it in this perspective, where, you know, we remember where we were when we first heard the Beatles, or people a few years older than us, you know, watched them on the Ed Sullivan Show, et cetera. Those people you're talking about that are like 10, 12 years younger than us, they're remembering when they first heard or saw the movie Purple
Exactly,
Rain.
Yeah. So
it's
that's
like
their,
that,
yeah.
That's their touchstone.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why, if you are wondering why is such a, you know, wow, okay, Prince is Prince, but they're making such a to-do about him, is you have to understand, too, that there's also a little, you know, bias in the fact that the people who are kind of controlling what we see on the media, that's their guy.
And like
Fallon said, exactly that. You know, it was Madonna in 84. It was Michael Still with Thriller. And it was Prince. And it was also Bruce Springsteen with Born in the USA.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Bruce, because last night at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn.
Oh, what did he do?
He opened the show with Purple Rain.
Did he really?
It's on YouTube.
Oh, my God.
Purple Light.
I've got to hear that.
Online a little bit ago.
Oh.
He came out. That was his first show since Prince passed away.
Oh, I've got to hear that.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty cool.
Well, not only that, but, you know, all these shows on Prince, on Bruce's current River Tour become available a week or so later on his website.
Right.
On CD or download. So that will be available. That's going to be awesome.
And, guys, I'm just looking right now. Twitter, TMZ. Just posted that Elton John paid tribute at his Las Vegas show.
Well,
what did he do? What did he just say?
Hold on a second. He's saying you're a purple warrior.
I was supposed to go to that show tonight, by the way.
He paused his $1 million piano show midway to talk about the singer during his chat. Elton called Prince Purple Warrior. This is according to TMZ. He mentioned how the singer was truly one of a kind. He shared a story about when he and Prince both had Vegas shows. He said he'd often see Prince in their hotel lobby getting home from the clubs just as Elton would start his day. Singer then went into, I guess that's why they call it the blues, with a Prince slideshow in the background.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And I was supposed to go to that show tonight, but they asked me to do this, and so I rearranged things. But I was going to be in Vegas tonight. Bruce Springsteen on Saturday night at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, paying tribute to Prince with what sounds like a great, great complete version. Go to YouTube and just hit Bruce Springsteen, Purple Rain, and you'll be able to see and hear that whole version. I can't wait to hear that whole thing. It's pretty cool just seeing it. He's all bathed in purple. And as Roger said earlier, Elton in Vegas tonight paid tribute to Prince. He's got his show in Las Vegas at the Caesars Palace Coliseum, and I guess they put together a quick video montage. There's a huge 125-foot video screen behind Elton at the Coliseum, and so apparently they put together a nice tribute to Prince in terms of a video collage, and Elton sang, I guess that's why they call it the blues. This is Elton Jim here at WGN. I should mention that. I'm just assuming you know who I am. Because I'm assuming you came here at 2, and you're listening. I mean, I'm here till 5. Why aren't you, right? But anyway, it is Elton Jim here at WGN. We'll be here until 5 o'clock, filling in for Dave Plyer this morning. The funny thing is, I should not be here. You want to know how dedicated I am and how much I love radio? I had a ticket tonight to see Elton, or not, Saturday night, in Vegas. And I got the call to fill in a couple of days ago, and I was able to rearrange the ticket, and so I will be going next Saturday to see Elton, which will be Elton John Concert for Me number 164. Thank you very much. So, I mean, yeah, it would have been cool to see that Prince tribute, but if I have a chance to be on the radio, folks, I love it too much. So, just so I hope you all appreciate the fact that I gave up a chance to see Elton do a Prince tribute tonight in Vegas. And what I was going to do, and what I'm going to do next Saturday, is one of my my famous Elton John adventures. I was going to, and will be, so I'll just say this in the future. On Saturday, I'll be taking a flight at 1 o'clock from O'Hare. I will land in Vegas at 3. I will go to see the concert at 7:30. It will end at 9:30. I will go back to the airport. I will take a red eye, and I will be back home Sunday morning at 6:15. So no hotel, no sleeping. Get on the plane, go to Vegas, watch the concert, get back on the plane, and get home.
We need to get you help.
Seriously.
We they talk about, Alcoholics Anonymous, yep. Narcotics, and gamblers. Right. And
But for instance, perfect example. If I had gone tonight, I mean, look at that. Look what I would have seen. I would have seen this once-in-a-lifetime Prince tribute that Elton did. So
okay.
That's why you go.
You know what? That's why they have YouTube, Jim, because I can sit at home. I can do a couple of clicks with my.
But I don't know if they're showing that. I don't know if they're going to show that. I mean, although I didn't go to.
Someone will have a video.
Yeah, I guess. Exactly. Because I didn't go to Brooklyn, and yet I'm watching Bruce do Purple Rain.
Exactly.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
I just like going. All right?
What are you going to do? Seriously. And I wonder about this, pal. What, and I'm an Elton John fan too, but I haven't seen 10,000 shows. I've only
well, the best part is, Mick. So about maybe a month and a half or so ago, I was on, and Roger was with me. Oh no, this is one of my first fill-ins, so it may have actually been a couple months ago. But I kept this clip because I loved it. I was talking about my adventures. It may have actually been the first show that I did back in October fill-in, and I was beginning to talk about I was going to a concert, blah blah blah, Elton John, blah blah blah. And Roger says, oh, Roger. Roger says, well, now, look, I like Elton John. I'm not as big a fan as you are.
Right.
And I said, oh, really, Roger? You have to preface that.
Right.
You mean you haven't been to 100, at that time, you hadn't been to 162 concerts? Oh, I thought you were. No, Roger, you are as big a fan as I am. My name is Elton Jim Roger.
Yeah.
It's not Elton Roger.
Well, Jim, here's my question, though. Okay, let's be honest, and I'm not wishing this, but Elton is not going to live forever.
No. Oh, okay, see, what are you,
Mick,
Debbie minute, Downer minute, here now?
See, Mick,
no,
this
I'm
is
just,
what...
I'm just asking you, what are you going to do? I used to ask this when I used to go to work in the middle of the night when I worked morning radio. I think I told you this. I used to see the Grateful Dead fans coming back from Soldier Field after the Dead would play two or three nights there. And they were all staying downtown, and they're all in their tie-dye and their sandals and their Birkenstocks and whatnot. And I used to watch these thousands of people, and I used to think, what are you going to do when Jerry Garcia is no longer here? Mm. And so I ask you, Jim, what are you going to do when Elton takes the dirt nap? What are you going to do?
I'll be a Michael Feinstein fan.
Oh, God. Guys, this is what, how I see it.
The Grateful Dead, the Grateful Dead fans found fish.
Yeah.
I'll just find Michael Feinstein.
You'll just dovetail, okay. I'll just find another.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Oh, no, Roger, what were you going to say?
So before he goes under, Elton John, I'm sure, is probably going to say, you know what? I can't do it. The fingers.
Hold
on a sec. So he's at his home, right? So here's the scene, Mick. Here's the scene.
Uh-oh, I love this. Here's they're the talking scene. About me.
Yeah, about you.
In front of me.
Yeah, ready? Who is it? Elton, it's me. Who? Jimmy. Oh, hold on a second. Click, click, chunk, chick, boom, click, boom. Hey, Jimmy, what do you want? Look, I just need one more concert to make 500.
Can you give me a little private concert?
Yeah, because what counts as a concert? At least five songs is a it counts as a concert.
There you go. Jimmy, not again. Oh, God.
Well, to tell you the truth, Elton has been throwing hints. He is 69 years old. He's got two young children. He does have some bad knees. You'd think, well, he sits at a piano, so how much wear and tear can he have? But that, you know, sitting at a piano for 60 years, so almost since he was 3 years old. So, I mean, think about that, 66 years old. For 66 years, this guy has literally been sitting at a piano almost every day to a great extent. And so he does have some problems, muscular problems. And as I said, some knee problems. He had some knee surgery. He's probably getting a little arthritis. I know that he has to certainly get massaged, because, he's just in that sitting position for 2.5 hours almost every night. And he has brought up the topic that within the next 2 or 3 years, he is definitely going to slow down. He still does over 100 or so shows a year, but he's going to start to definitely curtail that schedule, because he wants to spend more time with his kids and see them grow, and instead of gallivanting. So there is going to come a time when perhaps he may not die, as you guys are having him die.
I'm just having him retire.
But he may retire, and he may do. I don't think he'll ever quit until he dies. But he certainly, it sounds as if he's going to slow down his concert touring. And the bright spot of that, if there is a bright spot, from what I'm hearing, is a good thing for those of us who have seen him many times and are longtime fans. And I would put Mick in that category. I would not put you, Roger, because you are vicious. You are vicious. with your little. Did you hear? Did you hear Roger's little play act? What are you? The Shadow? He did like a whole puppet thing there with sound effects, and he did me, and he did Elton, and he did sound effects.
Mm-hmm.
What are you? Are you on that Carl show that Roger, and now Roger's going to do a little radio theater.
So what's the good news?
No, the good news is that he's going to that the plans are that he is going to do either a tour or perhaps go to cities and do a semi residency of 3 or 4 days in each city in more intimate venues and play all deep tracks, or
not just hits,
but songs from albums that got a lot of airplay on FM radio in the 70s. Songs like Harmony and songs from say Blue Moves in 1976, or Teacher, I Need You, or Elderberry Wine, or Where To Now, St. Peter from Tumbleweed Connection, and some deeper cuts. Razorface from Madman Across the Water, some deeper cuts that in some cases he has never played live, or if he did, he hasn't played in some of these in 45 years. So that is something, it's almost bittersweet, because it will be kind of the official end of him performing in a great deal. But at the same time, to hear some of these older songs is going to be a great treat, because unfortunately, Elton does not switch like Springsteen, and this, Mick. I mean, we've been to Springsteen shows together. I've seen 59 Springsteen shows since 1980, and I have never seen the same show. And I have gone to consecutive shows,
right,
on consecutive days.
So have I. Yeah.
And he has always. I mean, he'll certainly play some of the same songs, but the show, the set list is different every day. Songs are moved around. Some are taken out. New ones are put in. He does that with regularity. In fact, over the last 10 years, he's been taking requests with signs.
Yeah.
Right off the cuff, but Elton doesn't do that. Elton is got a set list for a specific tour or a specific show. He plays those songs. He rarely deviates from that at all. And so this will be kind of neat to see that. But just one last thing on Prince. What also is going to be interesting to see in the aftermath here. It's ironic. I just got the new Entertainment Weekly. And they do this feature called Chart Flashback. And in the new summer, the double issue that is out now with Captain America on the cover, I got this early in the week, like on Monday or Tuesday. And they highlight 1986. And it says, 30 years ago this week, on the Hot 100 chart. Monday's were manic. Mozart became a Europop muse. And Prince sealed it all with You Know What. And how ironic is that 30 years ago this week, Prince had the number one song.
There you go.
Which was Kiss.
Yeah.
And then, and number two song was Manic Monday, which he also wrote.
Right.
So, yeah, there's no doubt about the legacy of Prince. But here's the thing, Mick, and I don't know if you agree with this or not. So, you know, feel free to, you know, to disagree. But it, as much as he was an icon and everything, he has been making music for the last 30 years.
Right.
But it really, I mean, he had Kiss. I mean, this is 1986. So that's 30 years ago. He hasn't really had a major hit since then.
No, and I agree.
He's put out a lot of music, and I know there's this album, Sign of the Times, and everybody talks about it, but he hasn't dominated the charts in 30 years.
Right, and again, I think the thought there is he had such a stamp of, say, like, you know, we talked before, like from 1980 till the mid-90s, et cetera, that no matter what, that gets him into that, you know, iconic status, especially with Purple Rain and all that. And people still did go to his shows, but you're right. As far as being, you know, a chart-busting hitmaker, it doesn't last forever. And with Prince, you're right. It's like I couldn't name you a song from probably the last 10 years that he did. I'm not that so big into him that I was into that. But most people weren't because, again, he was kind of out of that public consciousness as far as, well, here's the latest, you know, top 40 hit from Prince's new album.
Yeah, he was prolific. And as I said, he has continually been making new music almost every 2 or 3 years, sometimes even, you know, consecutive albums within a year or so or even shorter than that. Don't get me wrong. He's remained prolific. And from what I heard some report that there may be thousands of songs in the vaults.
Right, that he recorded and put out.
I'm not putting down his overall impact, but in terms of being a, he's continued to tour, and I only, now did you see him in the 80s at all? At his height?
That's when I saw him. I saw him in 1988.
Oh, in 88. Because I saw him in 2004. There was an album called Musicology that he had put out, and he was touring with that in the round, which was pretty cool, and he hadn't been playing a lot of his hits in concert, and he decided that at this tour, he was going to bring back all the hits. And so I said, I've never seen Prince, and so I saw him in 2004 at the Allstate Arena, and I was up close, and I've never been a maniacal fan. I've appreciated his music. And I like a lot of his stuff, and Purple Rain's a great song, as we talked about some other ones. But and I Would Die for You is one of my favorites too. But when I saw him perform and play live and perform and play to that crowd, I said, yeah, okay, this guy, he is. He's a legend. He's a major guy. So he will be missed, certainly, for what he contributed. And we still don't know what killed him. There have been a lot of rumors floating around. We don't have any of the official word yet. I guess it's going to take a couple of weeks. But it's been quite a year, huh, Mick, for losing some major icons?
Well, that's what everybody talks about, between, you know, losing David Bowie and losing Glenn Frey and now Prince, and there have been others, too.
And even Lemmy. Remember Lemmy from Metalhead?
Yeah, and Paul Kantner from Jefferson Starship and Jefferson Airplane, et cetera. And everybody talks about what a lousy year 2016 is, and me being Debbie Downer, I said, hey, I got news for you. We're not even 4 months done with the year.
I know. Well, here's the one thing. And here's an interesting thing that now this hasn't been confirmed yet, but Roger Daltrey seems to have been talking about it to the point that it's fact. So I don't think we're spreading any crazy rumors. But in fact, just before I saw the item about Prince passing away, I read this story online and talk about, I think not only are we the only ones looking at the obituaries, it sounds like the rock stars are too.
They should be.
Yeah, because according to Daltrey, in October, in a town called Indio, California, not sure where that is, but sometime in early October, the plans are for a classic rock festival. You know, there's Lollapalooza, there's Coachella, there's Bonnaroo, with all the newer bands, but I think all the war horses from the 60s and early 70s are going to try to do one last gasp here, because you never know at this point.
Right. Well, but, who the accident.
Yes, over a three-day period. From the rumors that I've been reading about, over 3 days, I don't know who'd be sharing a bill. I'm not sure on what night, but the total lineup, and it really takes you through the major icons of the rock era. Bob Dylan, Paul McCartney, who obviously would represent the Beatles as well.
Sure.
Rolling Stones, The Who. Beatles, Rolling Stones, and The Who basically are the Holy Trinity of the British invasion.
Sure, they're Mount Rushmore, yeah.
Yeah, and then you've got Dylan. And then you've got Roger Waters from Pink Floyd, which were, again, huge in the early 70s with Dark Side of the Moon. And then Neil Young, who kind of represents the late 60s, early 70s kind of singer-songwriter era. And I'm not sure if they may add people as it goes on. I certainly think Elton should belong in there to some extent. He belongs somewhere on that Mount Rushmore. But
I would think also maybe a Tom Petty, a Bob Seger.
Yeah, we'll see. But those, I mean, those bands are the ones in terms of the...
I was going to say, if this is going to be like a three-day festival, they could call it the No Prostates Festival.
The Enlarged Prostate. I think I heard Flomax is going to be the sponsor.
They'll be on all the T-shirts.
Well, Mick, we're going to talk to you a little later in the show about some other topics, so I'll give you a call back. And welcome back. Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN Chicago. I was at the Blackhawk game on Saturday night, only a few hours ago, and they play a video before the game and talks about the Chicago Blackhawks are the defending champions. And they've got Bill Curtis narrating this little video. They represent a city. They are one goal. I'm Bill Curtis. We've got Mark Vasco on the phone. How you doing there, Mark?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm doing great. I'm always kind of charged, shot out of a cannon anyway, as I've told people all the time here. This 2-5 shift is no big deal for me because I've got insomnia anyway. I would be up, at 2 a.m., I'd be watching Car 54, Where Are You Right Now, when this show starts. So, to me, it's six of one and a half dozen of the other. But doing a lot better after seeing a great game in person. And as I said at the top of the show, I think that game six in 2016 is going to be one of the games where people say, I was at that game.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. That second period, that's about as good as they can play and have played in a long time.
Okay, I'm glad you said that because I was wondering, I was there, and, you know, a lot of times you're there, and so, you know, you're caught up in everything.
Right,
and
right.
So a lot of times you're not objective. But I said, I think that was some of the best hockey I've seen this Chicago Blackhawks team play, not just this team, this current team, but even this team... You know, aside from those that crazy first, that first Stanley Cup when it was just crazy. But, I mean, they just talk about a 180. They played a horrible first period. One of the worst. It was David Copperfield. It was the worst of times and the best of times.
Well, then they came out and they did everything in that second period. They played tremendous defense. Crawford was great.
Crawford didn't even do anything.
Well,
I mean, he maybe had three or four shots. I mean, there was a good chunk of 10 or 12 minutes where the puck was literally not in that side of the ice.
Yeah, no, that was pretty amazing stuff.
It was wild, wacky stuff.
That too.
But I'll tell you, I don't know what happened in that locker room, whether it was Quenneville or Taves, but somebody lit a fire. And it was under everybody's skate. It was cold steel on ice for sure because they came out shooting the puck, chasing the puck, checking. They were around the net. St. Louis didn't know what hit them. They really didn't know what hit him.
Yeah. Well, the captain, I mean, he didn't score a goal, but he did everything else.
Yeah, he was all over the ice. And you know what? Also, I noticed in that second period, Marian Hossa, for the first time in this series, was all over the ice. You know, he's getting older, and he's been hurt throughout his career, and he's starting to get older, and so he's slowing down a little. And I haven't heard too much about Hossa a lot this whole season, and he hasn't really been a major contributor, but he was all over that net in that second period.
Well, and I was happy for him to get the empty netter late in the game,
yeah,
too, because that was not an easy empty netter.
No, not at all. But I'll tell you, I was talking to people after the Hawks won in St. Louis the other night, and I said, you know, I know it's close to elimination, anything can happen, but that St. Louis had to, all of a sudden, after playing very confidently and up 3-1, to lose on your home ice in overtime, and they outplayed the Blackhawks the other night.
Oh, right.
To have lost that game and to have to come back to Chicago like they did, I'm sure it put something of a question mark in their minds, like, oh no, here we go again. And I expected the Hawks to come flying out, and they did not in that first period at all. And when it was 3-1, I was almost ready to leave. I thought it was going to be an 8-1 game.
I mean,
oh yeah, they were, you'd think they would be flying high. Their season is on the line here, and they weren't skating, they weren't hitting, they weren't aggressive, they weren't going after, it was just nothing. They did not show up.
Net.
Yeah, oh, several times. One time Elliot was on his Elliot was on his stomach one time, like 10 feet out of the net. And there were no Hawks there to hit this. All you had to do is just hit the puck.
Oh, I know.
So anyway, we are excited. I believe that that the Hawks are gonna win this series. They turned a switch on tonight, and now they have not looked like the Blackhawks of the playoffs in the last several years. They did tonight, and they look like now they've realized, okay, guys, it's time to start playing.
Well, yeah, they finally rose to the championship level. It was almost like, okay, they kept thinking they could flip the switch. Well, they never did, and then when they were desperate, it was like, oh, you know what? We're going to have to really step it up. And now they think they realize, oh, that's right, this is how hard we have to play.
And the other side of the coin is, remember, too, I mean, if the Hawks, say the Hawks had got blown out tonight, it would have been a very legitimate reason to say, I mean, we're certainly disappointed, defending champs. But let's be honest, as has happened after every cup, the Hawks have had to make some very difficult and very impactful trades to get rid of people because of the salary cap.
Oh, right.
And now they lost Patrick Sharp and Brandon Saad didn't have to leave. He left on his own. I wonder how Brandon Saad's feeling right now, sitting at home in Columbus. Nice choice.
Right.
Boy, talk about bad advice. If he doesn't fire his agent or his father, if his family were advising him, I would disown them. Why am I sitting at home in Columbus when these guys are the Stanley – that was a defending a Stanley Cup that I helped win?
Yep, no doubt about it.
What a terrible, terrible decision. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care how many houses you bought. I don't care how many cars you bought, how many PlayStations you bought.
It's more fun to win, isn't it?
This is a once-in-a-lifetime team. You're sitting there with guys like – teammates like Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa and Seabrook and Crawford. What are you doing?
Oh, I know it.
God.
How about Duncan Keith, by the way?
I'm sorry. Duncan Keith, too.
Duncan Keith has not been off the ice.
I know. Except when the league has taken him off. And I'll tell you.
I'm not sure.
And it was really nice was Andrew Shaw got a huge ovation when they announced his name in the starting lineup before the game. So he's been under his own kind of controversy there, but obviously the fans have embraced him and he's apologized, and Hawk fans love their players. What can you say? I am talking to Mark Vasco, who is a sports reporter and announcer here in Chicago, and currently the radio voice for now. You're the radio voice for everybody. Who do you radio voice for now?
Well, for Lewis University out in Romeoville, and for Benedictine University out in Lyle. And by the way, Keith Bunkenberg told me to tell you to say hi.
Oh, Keith Bunkenberg! Yes, I went to high school with him.
He said he went to St. Pat's with you.
Definitely, good old St. Pat's on the Northwest Side, Belmont and Austin.
And he's the men's basketball coach at Benedictine. We're Division III. We played in the national championship.
Right. Yes.
Finished second in the country, and he's the national coach of the year.
Awesome. Yeah, he was a very good basketball player at St. Pat's. He's a couple years younger than me, and I did notice that in the most recent St. Patrick High School newsletter, and I was very pleased to see that because Bunk is a good guy. He had an older brother who was my age who also played basketball on the varsity when my year, but Keith was a couple years younger, but I certainly knew him, and I think he played baseball too, and I played baseball. So I don't know if we played together on the same team. We may have actually when I was a senior, but yeah, congratulations. And please, if you see him again, please tell him I said hi. That's and congratulations. That's a great honor. He's taken a relatively obscure, basketball program and put them on the national map. That's amazing.
No doubt about it. We were either on national television or little school in Lyle.
Yeah, how crazy is that? Well, yeah, congratulations to them.
And I've been the voice of the Joliet Slammers, the professional baseball team that's in Joliet, but not this summer. I just got word that they've decided to save some money and go with an unpaid intern this season.
Oh, so, are you serious?
That's the life in the minors, you know.
Oh, my gosh. Well, what I wanted to one reason, I mean, I always love talking sports with you because you certainly are well-versed on a variety of things. But one interesting little caveat, but a little interesting perk of your career is that you were teamed in the radio booth with former and now late great Mill Pappas.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I've been really lucky. I've had 14 years in the minors, Kane County Cougars, like you say, Joliet, and I was with Milt. They were then called the Cook County Cheetahs. They're now the Windy City Thunderbolts. That's another independent team that plays in Crestwood. And I've been pretty lucky in 14 years. I've had 2 years with Milt Pappas as my color man and 2 years with Bill Melton as my color man with Kane County. So I've had some pretty cool guys in the booth.
Oh, wow. On both sides of the aisle, too.
Yeah, exactly. Cubs and Sox.
Well, here's the thing. So, Milt Pappas passed away, 76 years old. And, of course, he not only did he – I mean, he won over 200 games in the National League, which is a pretty impressive, accomplishment. He pitched – I believe he pitched in a World Series when he was with the Orioles. And at least I know he pitched in the playoffs. Never got to the playoffs with the Cubs.
No.
He was unfortunately in the Cubs during those tough years in the early 70s. But I wanted to get a sense of you because, he will go down in history. His greatest moment was while he threw a no-hitter, which is a great thing. He came within one pitch of a perfect game, which is certainly the highlight or the pinnacle for a pitcher, and he came within a pitch that was razor close. It could have went either way. Milt, I'm sure, thought it was a strike. It was close enough to call it, but he didn't get it. And ironically, he walks the guy, and the next guy makes an out. And it was so weird because he got a no-hitter, and it was very anticlimactic. And you see, he was kind of mad.
Teammates were still thrilled for him, but he was
Yeah, everybody's jumping on top of him, and if you look at the video, he's not that happy.
No, he's not.
Yeah, and so now you tell me, what was Milt Pappas the person like? We saw him as a player, but you got to sit down with this guy for how many seasons? 2 seasons, you said?
Yeah, so for 2 seasons, he was my color man for the home game.
What was Milt like?
Well, Milt was a really good guy, and the beautiful part about it was, well, we both are where we want to be. You know what I mean? It's like we're in the booth talking baseball. So, I mean, he was always, he was always in a good mood because, hey, we're at a baseball field. And I mean, I've heard some things where he could be cranky or this or whatever, but I mean, I never saw it with me because, you know, we're talking baseball, and it was pretty cool because, I mean, people don't really remember, I think, how good he was.
Oh, he was a very good, I mean, to your point, I mean, he won 17 games or more, I think, with the Cubs for 2 or 3 years, and those were pretty bad Cub teams.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, he started an All-Star game. He wasn't just in All-Star game.
Right.
He started one. I mean, this is a guy whose career ERA was 3.40.
Yeah, and I believe from what I was reading about him, he was kind of a phenom. He was 18 or 19, and he was already up with the big club with the Baltimore Orioles in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he came right from high school, practically right to the majors, and he was pretty amazing. And he knew so much about pitching. That was the beautiful part about it, because he wasn't never a fireballer. You know what I mean?
No. No, not at all. In fact, I think his best pitch was a changeup.
Well, exactly. So I mean, he told some great stories, and he knew baseball, and he knew pitching, and he was fun to be around.
And he also knew mutton chops.
Well, he did know mutton chops.
He had giant sideburns.
Yes, he did. Well, and the other story that he talked about, I mean, he never got over that perfect game thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't an act. Like, we would just be talking about something, and then that would come up. And the veins would pop.
Oh.
I mean, he never let it go that he got, you know.
Well, here's the thing. So it's
that's taken away from him.
With people, once again, you know, Cub fan, I hate to sound like I'm 100 years old, but you've got to put this stuff in perspective. You know, Blackhawks fans now are all jumping on the bandwagon, and the Hawks are the greatest thing. But there were some times when the Blackhawks had horrible teams when there were 5,000 people.
Absolutely.
At the United Center and at the old stadium. Similarly, with the Cubs, do you know that game, and I think we talked about this one time before, you could always tell at a Cub game, in the 70s especially, when school went back in. Because the park went from being pretty full, because it was a great place to see a game, always has been. But when school went back into session after Labor Day, the stands were empty. No one was there. And Milt Pappas' no-hitter took place in September in 1972. There were only 11,000 people at that game.
Well, you could hear the few kids that were there, which, you know, we want to hit.
Right.
You could hear the echo around the stadium.
I mean, it was crazy. But now here's my theory, because you could go on YouTube, hit Milt Pappas no hitter, and you'll find this. You'll see it there if you're hearing about this and wondering what all the commotion is, because it really was a weird and bittersweet thing. Because he, you know, a lot of times when a pitcher loses a perfect game, a lot of times they'll lose the no hitter too. It goes to all or nothing. But as I said, what's so ironic here is that he loses the perfect game, and the next guy, I think, popped up or something, and boom, game's over. He gets the no hitter, but you could see that Milt is not happy, even though he has still achieved something that few pitchers have ever done. So everybody talks about how close the pitch was and how the umpire, who's Bruce Fleming, who was one of the, you know, more colorful umpires of his era. He was kind of a short, stocky guy and kind of a, you know, hard as nails kind of guy, the big round face. The mask didn't even cover his face. So he called ball 4, and Pappas was mad at him. But, you know, Mark, now see if I'm out of line here. So, you know, Bruce Fleming takes a lot of heat from Cub fans, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
And as you said, Pappas still had it out for Bruce Fleming, right?
Oh, forever. He never forgave him. He never got over it. I mean, that was he was mad decades later.
Yeah. So, but here's my thing. The other you know, key player in this was a journeyman, a player named Larry Stahl. And Larry Stahl was the batter for the Padres who got ball 4 to break the perfect game.
Right.
Now, the count was, what, 3-2?
Mm-hmm.
And the pitch is right on, you know, it's right on the line there. It was a little outside and a little high, I mean, right, Mark? I mean, what do you think? Do you think it was a ball or a strike?
Well, the thing was, it was two pitches in a row.
Right, and it was in the same spot.
Because it was 2-2, and he throws a pitch that's borderline and doesn't get the call.
Right.
And then throws a pitch that's borderline and doesn't get the call. So it wasn't just the one pitch, it was two in a row that he thought he had.
And it was almost the same pitch.
You're right, and it didn't get either one of them.
Yeah. So, but what would you say? You think it was a strike or a ball?
I mean, I've watched it. You mean, I personally think it's a ball.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, I love Milt Pappas. I love Milt Pappas. But Milt, it was a ball.
Well, and trust me, I never told that to him in person.
Well, here's the thing. My point is,
going to get him mad at me.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, he's sitting right next to you. I'm not saying that Bruce Fleming, it was close enough where he could have given it to him and goes down in history. So Bruce Fleming is certainly, you know, now suddenly a Snidely Whiplash. You know, he's the bad guy. But here's my thing. You know who's gotten a pass over the last 44 years? Larry Stahl. Larry Stahl could have swung. He could have just had a...
Either one of them.
He could have had a fake swing and just swing.
I know.
And miss it. And give the guy... So, it was on Bruce Fleming. But I'm also going, wait a minute, Larry Stahl. You don't get off. You could have swung and missed, too. You don't have to leave it to the ump and let him take the fall. Larry Stahl easily could have made a phantom swing.
Absolutely right.
So I'm calling Larry Stahl out. And I know it doesn't matter. It's 4 a.m. And Larry Stahl is either dead or he's not hearing this. So it doesn't matter. But just to be on the record, I'm calling out Larry Stahl. I'm not agreeing with Bruce Fleming, but I'm also calling out Larry Stahl. And here's the thing. I went to my godson was playing in the state baseball finals about 12 years or so ago, maybe even longer. I can't remember now. And Milt Pappas was at the game, watching the game, because it was in Crestwood, I believe, which was, you know, near where he lived. And so he was sort of standing there, and I saw him immediately. His hair was gray now, obviously, but I recognized him. And nobody was really bothering him, and I didn't want to bother him. But at the same time, I was a big fan of his in that era. That was my era of growing up as a Cub fan. So I waited and waited, and to your point, you know, you said people said he was grumpy. He seemed like a nice guy, but he gave off this aura like, hey, this aura of don't bother me. But I walked up to him and I just looked at him and all I figured this, I'm gonna walk by, I'm gonna say this, he'll either get it or not, and we'll see what happens. And I just walked up to him, I just looked at him, I said, it was a strike. And he goes, no kidding, that effing Fleming. And he didn't say effing either. That effing Fleming. And like you said, his face got red and the veins popped and he started to go on for about 10 minutes. And I'm sitting there going, this is 30 some years later. And he's still screaming.
Oh, yeah. It was not an act. He was still mad about it. Absolutely.
God, it's so funny.
But yeah.
So hold on, Mark. We'll talk a little bit more about your remembrances of Milt as well as some big week for Chicago sports. So at the other side of the news. And it's Elton Jim Toronto back with you here at WGN. AM 720, 411. Been with you since 2. I'm staying till 5. I think you should too. If you haven't had enough of me, Roger.
Yes, Jack.
So I'm from Waukegan, you see.
Real.
Hardest working man in radio. I am going home after the show.
Yes.
And then I will be back to do a segment with Dean Richards on his show.
Well, why don't you just crash down to the green room?
Around 9 o'clock. Ah, I don't live too far. I'd rather.
Oh, okay.
Rather. You know,
there's a Starbucks right across the street.
Grab a few. Are they open
might be
yet?
Some. Well, by the time you wake up.
You think so?
Yeah.
I'm not a big coffee guy. Hey, this is all without caffeine, Roger.
Look at you.
This is without caffeine. I do not do coffee. Hate the taste. Always have.
Really?
Yep. Wow. Always have. Always will. From the Pepsi generation, my friend.
Oh, you do solo?
And I don't even, no, I don't even like pop, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay. All right.
Now, this is, you know, could you imagine if I did...
Your whole body is a temple. That's why you're staying away from these things.
Well, but could you imagine, you know, if I actually... Could you imagine, in the words of Charles Nelson Reilly, if I was on caffeine?
Oh, my God.
Oh!
Like I said, I've got... some more padding up in the room.
Yeah, more padding, exactly. But, yeah, it's been... been a crazy day, but I, anytime Dean wants, I love doing radio with Dean. He's been very generous and very kind and very supportive. And so when he calls, I jump. And he said, hey, you want to come on? And I'm like, great. And we're going to talk, I think we're going to talk a little Game of Thrones. Because this tonight, it is the morning. So tonight at 8 o'clock, Game of Thrones premieres. For its highly anticipated, it's highly anticipated sixth season, along with Silicon Valley, which is a great show, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Veep, which is one of my favorite shows, and which is a show that I would have to think, and I may be wrong, but if I'm wrong, it's not by much. Almost everyone associated in the cast has a Chicago connection.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's a big ensemble. If you've ever seen Veep, it's about Julia Louis-Dreyfus. First was the vice president, and now has become president. Right. And so it's a big ensemble, very dark, funny, fast, quippy, vulgar, bawdy. There's not a redeeming character on the show, which is what I like about it, because it's about Washington and politics. So there shouldn't be, but it's well written and it's great. It's got this really dark edge, but everybody involved. And it's a big, as I said, a big ensemble, has some kind of Chicago connection, whether either they were born here and worked here or came from somewhere else and stayed here for a while. Julia Louis-Dreyfus was at Northwestern and then was at the Practical Theater. Gary Cole, who's on the show from Steppenwolf. I think he was
from
born
Chicago,
in Park Ridge.
Sure.
Anna Chomsky.
Was just in town last week.
Yeah, Anna Chomsky from the Oak Park area. She's in it as well. There's a few other people, and it's just amazing. The Kevin Dunn, who is Nora Dunn's brother, born and raised in Chicago. So aside from the Chicago connection, it's just one of my favorite shows. So anyway, we're going to talk about the upcoming seasons there. So if you haven't had enough of this, then you tune in at 9, and you'll hear me on with.
Well, do me a favor,
with Dino.
You?
What's that?
I will be asleep because I, like you, have to return later today, but. My later today is not until 5 o'clock.
Oh, pfft, wimp. Wimp.
Excuse.
Sleep is highly overrated. Highly overrated, Roger.
Tell me about it. I don't get any. I go home. I don't sleep.
Well, it's hard. You come down. It takes you an hour to come down from
Rufus
this.
Wakes me up. You know, what are you going to do?
Well, Rufus, is Rufus Wainwright at your house?
No, Rufus T. Firefly. Say hi for me.
Would I definitely you? Will. I love Dean Marino, and
I love him too. He's great, and I've done some Sundays with him way back in the day.
And I guess after you're done today, his news guy Dave Schwann.
That's right.
And I've had fun with Schwanny on that show because Dean has been very generous at times and invited me to join them when they've done some remotes. And so I've got to know Dave fairly
in fact,
well.
He just walked in.
Oh well, hey, hi Schwanny.
Hi who?
Yeah, Elton who?
No. Elton says hi.
Hey,
Elton.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, he hasn't had his coffee yet.
Well, my Dave Schwann story.
Cut number one, he says.
Yeah. My Dave Schwann story is the first time I went on a remote with Dean was in November at Tree Time out in South Barrington.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And so I'm
drunk. You wore your brooch.
Yeah, I had my brooch, and it's a festive pin.
Festive pin, yes, thank you.
Old women wear brooches. Virile men wear festive pins.
Thank you.
And I had my Santa coat. And anyway, so I'm driving out to South Barrington. You know, it's a good hour drive for me, 45 minutes. And I'm driving out there, and Dean is in the show began. I came in after the first hour, so Dean... when the show starts, is announcing all the guests and all the people there, and he says, "We've got Dave Schwann," and he said, "Oh, we've got the Million Dollar Quartet, and we've got this person and that person and the owners of Tree Time," and he said, "We've got a very special guest, so I'm very excited," and I was like, "Wow, how nice of Dean to give me this this special
yeah.
intro. He's like, I'm really excited to hear this guest, and I'm waiting to hear my name. And he says, Dave Schwann's father.
Of course.
Mr. Schwann.
Yeah.
And then he goes, so then he gives a little patter about him and Dave. And then and he says, and then we've got another guest I'm so excited about. And I'm like, well.
Again, now it's got to be you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His mom.
Well, of course, because she makes some great food.
I understand that. You know. But he never mentions me.
And
so I'm sitting there going,
I'm not saying nothing.
No, yeah. So I'm sitting there going, did I get bumped by Mr. Schwann?
Yeah, Mr. Schwann.
So I almost turned around and just went home. I'm like, geez, I got up here at 7 in the morning. I'm driving out the Gobbler's Knob to help him out. And then he's telling how happy and excited he is about these two guests. And I'm saying, well, this is really nice of him. And he says, Mr. Schwann and Ma Richards.
Right. Well, those are the
Is Mr. Schwann going to do a Jack Benny for him?
No.
Oh, Roger.
Yeah.
I don't hear Mr. Schwann doing that. Is he going to do a Ron Santo? I mean, come on. I don't think that Rogers or that Dave Schwann's father does a Ron Santo.
You don't know that.
I don't think he does. Is he going to sing If I Was a Rich Man?
Hold on a second. Let me ask. Hey, Dave, does your dad sing? See, his dad sings.
Yeah.
Does he do impressions?
To an extent. Yeah. So anyway.
I tell you, that extent impression is pretty awesome.
Nobody does extent.
No, not like.
I've heard some people do to an extent.
Right.
But Mr. Schwann does
not
the best.
Not like his dad does it.
He does the best to an extent I've ever heard. But no, I love Dave, and we did the stair climb together, show together as well.
Oh,
and,
that's right. I remember that. Yeah.
And we sat next to one another. He's a really good guy. I like Dave.
And he brings treats.
Does he?
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't bring any to me.
Well, you're down there. We're up here.
What am I, 700 miles away?
What are you, chopped liver?
There's a place down there. All you do is you walk from the newsroom, you go to an elevator. Is it too much to ask that I should not get with whatever treats that this man is bringing? He's bringing them to you just because I'm a Gentile. I don't get anything, but he gives them to Roger because it's his Passover and they're Seder-ing.
Well, that's what
is Dave Jewish?
That's what he did to you. He passed over you.
Oh.
He came up here.
Just like the green ooze in the Ten Commandments. Well, I do have blood over the doorway.
Yeah, he says he'll come down and console you.
Is Dave Jewish?
No.
No, okay. I didn't know what I don't know what. No. I didn't know what you. I didn't know Badish was Jewish.
No, well, it's actually the name is German based.
Ah.
From the Baden, Germany area.
Oh, the Baden.
Yeah.
Oh, so the Badishes from Baden.
Baden. Yeah.
The Baden Badishes. What peasant family were you from?
The same one next to the guy singing If I Were a Rich Man.
Golden. When did our daughter grow up?
And he sings it every day, all day long. We keep telling him to shut up already.
When did our daughter grow? Sunrise, sunset. Anyway.
All right, yes.
Going to get back to the.
What were we talking about?
I have no idea. Let me ground this show again. Let me get Mark Vasco back. Are you there, Mark?
I am. Yeah.
Okay. Could you bring some grounding to this show, please?
It's too late for that.
Yeah. Mark Vasco, sports reporter and announcer in the Chicago area, our guest to talk a little bit more about sports. So, Mark, we talked some Hawks, and I did have to say also, I wasn't aware of this guy too much. But he really impressed me tonight. Good old number 14, Richard Ponick.
Oh, he had an amazing game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he made such a nice dish-off pass to Taves on that tying goal. It was really, that to me was the key pass of the game. And he made a great play. But anyway, you and I are big Cub fans. And even though they got a trounce today, I understand, by the Reds, they still have 13 wins. And there's still some time left here in April. I don't think they had 13 wins last year. Well, no, last year I shouldn't say that. But over the last couple years, they haven't had 13 wins until June.
At least.
Yeah.
This is our best start
since the team won a World Series. Literally 1908 was the last time we had this kind of a start.
You know what's so crazy about this? Because we talked about this a few months ago, or last month before the season started. We're diehard Cub fans, and I believe that this is the first time, before the season started, it was the first time that you're always excited about the coming season, whether they're good or bad. But this year, it was legit. And they have played right out of the box. I mean, could you imagine? They could go wire to wire. There is no reason why this team, the way they are playing, the way they are hitting, especially the way they're pitching, the way they're just playing as a team, solid baseball, hardly any errors, timely hits, good pitching, both in the bullpen as well as the starting. There's no reason that they can't go wire to wire, is there?
No, there really isn't. I mean, all the stats are just crazy. They have two pitchers that have won their first four starts. Okay, now again, that's the last time that happened.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
1918. There's all these things where it hasn't happened in 100 years or whatever.
Yeah, three-finger Crawford.
Exactly.
One of those guys.
Exactly. Well, and again, they're not just winning.
No.
They're winning by touchdowns.
Well, think about it. That the no-hitter, Arrieta's no-hitter. Forget about the no-hitter. The score was 16-0.
Oh, exactly.
16-0.
No, it's been crazy.
Usually no hitters are like 2-1, 2-0, 1-0. 16-0.
I mean, their run differential is insane.
Tell me, as a Cub fan, and a longtime Cub fan, a long suffering Cub fan, as we all are.
Yeah.
If you are a Cub fan, that goes along with the territory. Mm-hmm. That adjective, long suffering, automatically, enters the sentence. Isn't it strange to actually expect the Cubs to win the World Series this year? Legitimately, not out of any devotion or any wishful thinking, but out of pure objective viewpoint. You cannot deny that the Cubs have a legitimate, more than legitimate shot of winning the World Series. And that's so crazy to say that.
Well, it is. And it's where, like, I can't even deal with it. Like, I literally can't even go there.
Yeah.
Like, my brain can't wrap myself around it. So all I do is, I'm like, October is going to take care of itself. I can't even think about it. Just the fact that I know this is going to be a fun summer.
Well, think about this. So Jake Arrieta has thrown two no-hitters within 11 starts going back to last year. I mean, that's ridiculous.
No, I know.
And then here's the best part. He was quoted this week. This is the difference. And you can't say enough. I mean, you have to give credit where credit is due. Theo Epstein blew this thing up. He created a new culture, and clearly Joe Maddon is an integral part of the chemistry and the environment and the atmosphere around there. Jake Arrieta was quoted this week as saying he may throw two more no-hitters this season.
He didn't have his best stuff. He didn't have his best stuff.
Did you ever hear a pitcher predict no-hitters?
Yeah,
that's the confidence level these guys have. Yeah. That's amazing. I mean, granted, they have installed a strip club in their locker room. I understand that may help the team. I know they give out Madden bucks after each game, and they go to this party room that looks like, I mean, that new locker room has this kind of lighting that looks like a strip club, and it's in the round, and there's this table in the middle. I thought I saw a pole in the middle.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Coming out of the Cub logo from
so
the ceiling.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, I go back to when there was the Sosa McGuire home run chase, okay?
Right, yeah.
And at that time, I was the baseball beat reporter for the news station down the dial in the city. And so I'm there every day, and I'm covering the home run chase every day.
Which was extraordinary.
Which was amazing. So those games where the Cardinals and McGuire are in town, it was a circus. It was crazy. So Sosa's hitting homers, McGuire's hitting homers. They would have a special press conference every day after the game for just those two guys, okay? And they would bring them into a separate room. But there's no place to do it at the old Wrigley. So it was literally like an old, I don't even want to say closet, but it was, all I know is they put all the media to get some sort of a big room. It had to be like an old supply closet.
Right.
To where you literally had to duck your head. You have 50 grown men all hunched over. I'm not exaggerating. I could not stand straight up in that room because there's no place to have it.
And this is a major league club.
So you've got Sosa and McGuire, and we're all like hunched over.
And McGuire was a big guy.
And, you know, it's 100 degrees in there, and it's 100 degrees humidity. That, like, the ceiling is sweating on me, and because it's a 100-year-old building. I mean, I get it. There's no place to have it. Well, so now they've got this incredible clubhouse. I can't relate at all. It's like it doesn't even seem like the same place.
No, it looks like it looks like Scores. It's like the Sugar Shack or something.
the spinning ball on the roof is a little much. Yeah.
Well, do you remember the old days at Wrigley when the players they used to have a catwalk over the concourse?
Oh yeah,
and you would see like Johnny Bench and Pete Rose. You'd be walking in the concourse getting a hot dog, and you look up and there's Johnny Bench or Willie Stargell just walking across because that's how they got to the dugout.
Oh, I'll never forget the first time I had to go to the visiting locker room, and they're like, "It's where?"
Yeah,
you have to go up all these stairs up a catwalk.
That's what I mean.
You're looking over people walking underneath you. I'm like,
that was crazy.
It was.
Man, well, I tell you,
the fact that they've finally made this like a much nicer place is good for them.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a fun season, and I'm watching Cub games now from the very beginning. In fact, I went away for like 4 days over the last weekend. We went to Cape Cod, and I was kind of out of touch with, you know, finding out the scores, and I assumed, well, probably the Cubs came back to earth, you know.
Correct.
And then I come home, and they're 12-2 or something, and I'm like, whoa, jeez. What is going on here? So, I mean, it's going to be a fun, as you said, you hit it right on the head. It's going to be a fun, fun summer and hopefully a very fun fall.
I guess. Like I said, I can't even go there. I'm going to have fun for the next 5 months, and whatever happens in the 6th month is gravy.
Yeah, right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mark, for staying up with and coming on today. I really appreciate it, and we certainly will talk again. And thank you for your Milt Pappas memories.
My pleasure.
You know, his arms weren't the only thing that dangled. So just remember that.
I cannot substantiate that one way or the other.
Wow, you were in the locker room with him, weren't you?
Just the press box.
Oh, okay. Take care, Mark.
Relaxed, but not that relaxed.
Oh, there you go. Take care, Mark.
See you later.
It's Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN AM 720 in Chicago. We've been having a good time since 2 a.m. and we are almost done. I can't believe how fast 3 hours goes. We got about 20 minutes left. If you hadn't had enough of this 4 pounds of radio bologna in a 1 pound bag, just stay tuned to WGN. And around 9 o'clock or so, I'm going to come back for an hour just to. A little segment though with Dean Richards. Always love doing radio with Dean, and he invited me on. And if he asks, I jump. And so I'm looking forward to that. I'll have a few hours for the Sandman to come by and sprinkle some sand in my eyes and maybe get a few hours of sleep. And then I'll be right back here with all bright eyed and bushy tailed to have some fun with Dean at 9 a.m. on his show. And his show goes from 9 a.m. till 1 o'clock, and he's going to be doing a special tribute to Doris Roberts. The actress most know is Marie Barone from Everyone Loves Raymond, who passed away this week at age 90. Obviously, the Prince death has overshadowed many pop culture deaths, including the wrestler Chyna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, she died earlier that day, I believe.
Right. There was breaking news on TMZ that she had been found. I guess she had... They think she might have been dead in her apartment for a couple of days, but it broke earlier that morning. Yeah.
And that's Mick Kaler, by the way, joining us again for our expanded version of Pop Culture Club. If you understand that, it's pop culture, and then it's culture club.
That's right.
Yeah. You get that? Oh, Roger.
Yeah, I see you paid the big bucks for an advisor to think that one up, huh?
It's right here. Yeah. It's all here, my friend. Those are the throwaway ideas. You should really see the other ones. Those are ones in the shower. Oh, you know.
I don't think we need to go there.
But so Mick, yeah. I was thinking about this. So China, I mean, she's not a huge celebrity, but she certainly
was.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not a big wrestling fan, so she's not a big deal in my mind. But Mick, I'll give you a trivia question.
Okay.
No prizes involved. Wow. As an incentive.
All right.
Who died the same day as Michael Jackson?
Farrah Fawcett.
Very good, sir.
Yeah. In fact, that broke, and everybody started to make a big to-do, and then all of a sudden came the news that collapsed at his house or was found unresponsive, you know, with his, dealing with his, that doctor that allegedly gave him some messed up medicine. So,
well, we're going to see what's going to happen here with Prince. There's some interesting, theories going on there about what happened with him too. So you never know if he had his own Dr. Nick or something like that. You know what I mean?
Well, did you see the report a little earlier this morning, TMZ?
What?
They're thinking that he was kind of hooked on Percocet.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Roger.
Yeah, but again,
I'm not one to spread gossip. Well, I guess,
no,
like you are.
No, it's not
the newsman.
One, they're reporting it. Two,
no,
they're not naming the sources, though it's a source.
Right.
From when he landed his plane, I think, where was it?
In Moline.
Moline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I understand. You know, this whole story. You know, what's funny is Prince was always, his whole life was covered in mystery. You know, he was quiet, and he was supposedly a Jehovah's Witness, and then he was a Christian at one time, and he was always, you know, kind of a hermit, and he was weird, and he talked very low, and, you know, there was always this mystery revolving around him, and now there's a great mystery about his death, which I'm sure he would be actually, liking to some extent, not that he's dead, but but that there is this mystery about him. But apparently he had a hip operation, and they're saying that maybe that's where he got hooked on these painkillers.
Which happens to many people, both famous and not famous.
Yeah, but here's my question. Apparently this final concert that he did was in Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
Now he's flying to Minneapolis to go home, right? Minnesota.
Right, he's on his private jet.
How do they get to Moline?
I guess
Moline is west.
Whatever the path they took, they were near Moline, and there was this emergency, a supposed emergency on the plane. Now, the original report was that he had flu-like symptoms. Now, I don't know how bad your flu-like symptoms
That's
have
a to bad
be.
Flu, man.
Yeah, to say, hey, we got to drop this plane down and get to the hospital in
But Moline. I just don't understand what the flight path was. I mean, to me, if you were in a hurry, it seems to me from Atlanta to Minneapolis or Minnesota, you're going to fly over Chicago.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he couldn't land in Chicago. You know?
Well, first of all,
no Meg's Field.
Yeah, that's that.
Again,
thanks,
it's
Mayor
his
Daley.
Private jet.
It's Mayor Daley's fault that Prince is dead.
Wow, that was a big jump.
Airport. Well, anyway, getting back to Prince, you know, the report was, Jim, that he got to the Moline hospital, and when they showed up at the landing strip to pick him up, he was supposedly, the one report regarding this Percocet business, he was unresponsive on the jet.
Oh, really?
And they showed up and had to get him to the hospital and give him one of those save shots, call them, where they pretty much revive you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard that he wasn't, they said he should stay and they couldn't get a private room or something?
Yeah, they went in a private room and couldn't get one. You know, I'm not sure how big that hospital is and what the situation was. But then after like 3 hours, he left and went home. And then it was like the next day or that weekend that he hosted this dance party at Paisley Park, which I never knew. He had many events where people from town could come into his estate and go to these dance parties and concerts.
Paisley Park, admission is easy, just say you believe.
Yeah, there you go.
I love
and
that.
I heard more about these parties. You could not bring your cell phones, and nobody was allowed to have cell phones. and no smoking, no drugs, and no booze.
But Percocet was allowed.
Well, maybe with Prince, but anyway, seriously, it was this whole thing of, you know, hey, you know, because again, you know, the Jehovah's Witness business and all that, that it was, these were like clean, normal affairs, and he was there that night for this dance party thing, and then, you know, a couple of days later, he's gone.
Yeah, we shall see. The Purple Warrior, as Elton suggested, and I was told that Elton John did a tribute to Prince at his Las Vegas show on Saturday night, and that is on YouTube, so someone did record that. So that's on YouTube, and Bruce Springsteen opened his show with Purple Rain on Saturday night in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. So that's also up on YouTube. So check out those two things. Two major performers giving their homage to Prince. And so, you know, that's really something when you think about the fact that Bruce and Elton are both, you know, in their mid to late 60s. And here's Prince in, you know, his mid 50s, younger than they are. And yet they are bowing to him. So that does say something.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing. You talk about Springsteen. I wanted to talk about this because there's an aspect of this story that I don't think has been brought out. And over the last couple of weeks, most likely heard about this North Carolina law called the bathroom law. And it has some a variety of other parts to it. But one of the main parts of this law is that you can't use a public bathroom, and you have to go to a public bathroom based on the sex that is on your identification. So if you're a transgender or you're a transvestite and you haven't had the operation and you're just dressed as the opposite sex.
Right, you have an identity of that.
Your identity of that, you can't use the bathroom of which you are dressed. You have to go in as to what kind of plumbing you have. And, you know, as we are such, you know, we may be on the verge of electing our first female president, and yet we still really are a very misogynistic society and a very male kind of oriented society, as much as female empowerment has certainly taken over in the last couple of years. And so, of course, the first thing that everybody clung to was that pervert guys would be able to go into a woman's bathroom dressed as a woman and either watch women go to the bathroom or potentially attack them or assault them or peek at them or do something, right?
Right.
But here's something that this law, or at least the controversy about it, hasn't addressed. And I bring this up because first Bruce Springsteen several weeks ago canceled a show in North Carolina in protest of this. And soon after that, Ringo Starr canceled one, and so did Pearl Jam. So suddenly, you know, the artistic community was beginning to protest this, and the liberal side of the aisle was protesting this because it was viewed as a very kind of right-wing-based law. So everybody's worried about the guy dressed up as a woman and, like, saying, I guess any guy then could just dress up like a woman, go into, you know, and then, you know, and, you know, without that, they would, you know, they could possibly go in. They would be, are now going into bathrooms and assaulting women. So we have to stop that.
Right. They take it to that extreme.
Yeah. But here's the thing that I don't think has been mentioned. If you bring this, put this now, and the law is in effect in that state. If what you're now saying is that if a man is dressed as a woman, he has to use the men's bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you tell me, who is putting who in danger? Are there more perverts who have been dressing up like women and going into women's bathrooms? Has there been an epidemic of this that we haven't heard about?
Yeah, this is where, again, like I said, when you take it to this extreme, it gets ridiculous.
Because here's the point. According to this law, we're trying to prevent a guy from dressing as a woman and going into a woman's bathroom. We're trying to prevent that. So we passed this law, apparently. But what you're also then, now the reality of that law as passed is that a man who does dress as a woman, who identifies himself as a woman, is now forced to use a men's bathroom, meaning that a man in woman's clothing is going to have to go into a man's bathroom.
Well,
isn't that going to open him up to getting beat up by some guy, some homophobic guy?
Absolutely. And
where do you think the greater harm is?
Put it in celebrity perspective. Let's say Caitlyn Jenner is in North Carolina on business and has to use the bathroom. Under this law, Caitlyn Jenner in the heels and the dress
has to go to the men's bathroom.
Has to go to the men's bathroom. And again, like you said, they're going to have some guy in there going, you know, what's this? What's this all about? And next thing you know, there's somebody getting pummeled.
Exactly. So, I mean, we're trying to prevent something which I've never heard any, you know, there's no big epidemic of women getting assaulted or raped or being peeped on by men dressed in women's clothing. Have we heard about, is there some big fad going on?
No, this is
so,
like I said.
So now you're going to make men who do identify as women go to a man's bathroom, and a guy, they're going to walk in there, and there's going to be a guy either, you know, in the stall with panties and a dress and high heels in the stall, and some guy is going to walk in there and go, what the hell's going on here, man?
Right, exactly.
So aren't we creating now more opportunity for people to get hurt than have been getting hurt? This, to me, is a regressive law.
Yeah. Well, it's that, Jim, and also, and I've seen this a lot online, and it's true, you look at the problems that go on in this country, whether it's racial or social, economic, it's like, you know, the last thing we should really be worrying about is, you know, who we're peeing next to, okay?
Well, and exactly correct, but you know, but what scares me is that there is such a still, you know, as much as, you know, as our country has moved very quickly in the last several years, especially when you think about gay marriage, the fact of the matter is that you can't expect people in one day, and I'm not condoning their behavior, and I'm not condoning their attitudes, but from their side of the aisle as well, you can't, just because the Supreme Court one day says gay marriage is okay, you can't expect people who may have a problem with gay people or someone who has been raised religiously that it's a sin. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be moving more toward being more inclusive, but you can't expect them in one day to turn a switch and suddenly be tolerant.
Right, exactly.
And
you know, and to that point, look at the racial things that have happened for years. Okay, you know, blacks have to have the same rights as whites, et cetera. There are people that are still fighting that.
That's what I mean. So this law, to me, scares me because I'm afraid that we're going to see a lot of guys who are, you know, who identify as women are going to get beat up. I think that's going to happen, and that's really a sad thing.
And this is Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN. I'll be on with Dean, in fact, in about 4 hours on that show this morning. So if you haven't had enough, tune in around 9 or so, and I'll be on with Dean for an hour or so to do a segment. And right now we're talking to Mick Kaler, just wrapping up the show. I've been on since 2 o'clock. I've had a really good time. We've talked about a variety of issues and topics today. I've really enjoyed the show. And one quick, before we get out of here, Mick, I did want to mention one thing. So how about this Lucas Museum?
the new proposed site over by Navy,
So now Rahm Emanuel knows that he can't put it in the original place. There's a lawsuit that is stalling things. George Lucas really wants to get this thing moving. So now the latest option from Rahm is to knock down the old, ugly, big brown behemoth of part of McCormick Place.
Right, the east side of it.
But I, from what I understand, that'll cost like $1.2 billion or something?
Sure.
Or there's some, you know, this, you know, if you remember, this George Lucas folly was supposed to be privately funded. And now I'm starting to hear more and more about how we're borrowing money for this. And this is a city that has major pension, major infrastructure, major school problems,
a budget that's as bad as the state.
Yeah, and we've already borrowed, and now because George Lucas's wife lives here, we've got to try to put up some museum that George Lucas wants to put up. And I think it's a cool idea, don't get me wrong. But in reality, let's be honest, folks. As much as it's cool, it doesn't really belong here.
No.
George Lucas is not from Chicago. There is no connection to Star Wars in Chicago.
It never fit.
No. And the only reason that it's in Chicago is because George Lucas's wife is a heavy hitter here in Chicago. And I think, to be honest with you, initially, and I have nothing to support this except my own crazy ideas, I wouldn't be surprised if Chicago, as a favor to get San Francisco back on board, because they were supposed to be the site for this, and then they turned George Lucas down. And I'm wondering if George Lucas's wife said to Rahm, hey, could you just throw Chicago into the mix like you're interested? So this way it shows that there's some other, you know, parties interested, and then San Francisco will get off the stick and they'll give us what they want, because he wanted to put the museum in this this area called the Presidio, which is a beautiful, open land right off the water. Which is what, and that's what everybody knows. Everybody says, well, they should put it in Bronzeville or put it somewhere else. People, you don't understand. He wants it near water. And that's why it was by the Soldier Field parking lot. And now it has to be, if they're going to put it somewhere where the McCormick place is, because he wants it near water. I love Han Solo, but I don't think we need to go in more in debt so that we can have a giant Chewbacca.
Yeah, or see the original R2-D2 or C-3PO.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. It doesn't belong here. It shouldn't be here. It would be cool if you could work it out, but we shouldn't be borrowing money to put this up in Chicago. Not in the shape that we're in right now.
Well, yeah, financially. And the other part of it, Jim, that I keep thinking about was, remember back in 2008, 2009, when we were in line for the 2016 Olympics?
Oh, thank God that never happened.
And I kept saying, are you kidding? In the city of Chicago with the fights and the...
Gary and I were very against that, and we got a lot of heat from that.
So the weather, I was like, they won't even dig the first swimming pool till like 2012.
Oh, could you imagine the debt we would have been in for that?
Yeah, we would have been on the hook in a horrible way. And the Lucas Museum is the same way. It's just... It doesn't belong. Yeah, and you're right. You know, George Lucas's wife is from Chicago. They had their wedding at a big fancy to do in a park in Chicago, et cetera.
And got special privileges to do that, by the way.
Right, exactly. But this is just something that's got to be backed down on. There's just no way.
Well, thank you so much for joining me this morning, Mick Kaler. You can hear his work most mornings, sometimes with several times during a week. His parody songs on WGN television in the morning news. So thank you so much, Mick, for joining me. It's always fun.
My pleasure, Pat. We'll talk soon.
All right. This is Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN. I had a great time this morning from 2 to 5 filling in for David Plyer. I want to thank Roger Badish for his contributions. We had a great time. Mark Vasco also joining us in to talk about sports. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. I had a good time. I hope you did too. Please listen at 9 o'clock. I'll be on with Dean this morning. And I believe on Mother's Day from 6 to 9, I'll be filling in again. So you can't get rid of me that quick. I want to also thank... Shantae, my producer tonight, doing an excellent job. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. I'm Elton Jim. Have a great day.